it's Richard Geller. This month for the Free and Clear Club, as part of your membership, I am absolutely thrilled to have this interview with Tom Hoffman. Tom is a very experienced real estate broker who has done over 100 9-day house sales. He will call it the 5-day sale, but it's essentially the same thing. And I caught up with Tom. We did a very, very extensive interview. You're going to hear Tom's inside scoop details about the listing agreement, about what he does prior to the marketing period to prepare the marketing period itself, what he does there, what works, all the specific details, also what happens in the inspection period, how he prepares the folks that help him, and what he does in the round robin and afterwards to settle. It's great stuff, and you'll see his track record is amazing. He's done so well with these 9-day sales, and he does so many of them. And in this very distressed environment today that we're having, I think you're going to find this one of the most valuable interviews you've ever listened to. So with that, I want to say one more thing. The recording quality is not that great. We're not in a studio. I had to do this on the phone and record it. But I wanted you to have the full experience and the benefit of every word, just as I did. And so without any big-time editing, I think you'll hopefully pardon the sound quality. And now here's the interview that I did with Tom Hoffman.
So I just turned the recorder on here. It's Richard Geller with Tom Hoffman on the 19th of June. And Tom, you've done, what, I think about 100 or more than 100 of the 9-day house sale or the equivalent. Is that right?
No, I think so. I think it's probably getting pretty close to that number anyway.
And most of those,
quite a few of them anyway.
And most of those are as a realtor or as the owner of the property?
No, just as a realtor.
Okay.
Most all of them, there's only one that I've really actually done that was my own, and that was my mother's property down in Salida. She passed away 3 or 4 years ago, and that's what we did down there.
And let's talk about, if we could, the listing process. You know, particularly, how do you find listings, and how would you find listings if you're somebody that's setting out right now to do the 9-day sale?
Generally, what I do is I've been on the Craigslist, and a lot of the stuff that I get right now is by referrals, because I do a buy referral only program too, that, and that's how a lot of them come, is that, you know, one leads me to another. But I've also, you know, run some ads. The ads that say, if I can show you how to sell your home in less than 30 days for top dollar, will you call me? Or, you know, just things like that, and get the calls that way. Some of it's done on Craigslist. There's several. You get a couple of places on Craigslist, and then we do a newsletter once a month in my business that has a little ad in it about the 5-day or quick sales.
Okay, so then you build a house list and you use your house list also.
Pretty much so.
Okay, and how do you set up a listing presentation?
Well, generally, that's pretty much the way I do a regular listing, is that I go in with people call and I do all of the market analysis and stuff on the properties, and then when I go in and give them a menu of how we can do the sale of their home, and that menu has a whole bunch of different options, all the way up to being a full commissioned realtor to put their property on the MLS or whatever, or to do it just as the 5-day sale. I generally like to have a little more time than that. You know, usually about 3 weeks, but the 5-day sale is sweet. And then there's a graduated fee and stuff involved, depending on how much they want me to do or not do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call ours a 9-day sale just to differentiate it, by the way.
Right, sure.
Yeah. So you're talking to the homeowners, and you talk to them on the phone and you figure out what it is that they're really in the market for, whether they're looking for someone for full service or whether they just want someone to list on the MLS?
Well, I start with their kind of get a feeling of what their needs are. You know, if they're looking to just sell to buy another one, or, you know, if they're in a foreclosure situation. The last one I did a couple of weeks ago was in a foreclosure situation, and they just about didn't give me enough time to do it, but it worked, and it worked well.
So they were actually facing going to losing their house in a court ordered sale or a trustee sale, and that you were like trying to beat the deadline.
That's correct. Here in the state of Colorado, we have they now recently have changed the law on foreclosures, but these people were under the old law, and that was that from the day of the sale, they have 75 days to redeem their property. And so that was the period that we were working on, and they waited till almost 10 days before the last day of the redemption was up for us to do the sale.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And so you, in 10 days, you did the whole 9-day sale. You did the whole thing, and you got...
Absolutely.
Wow. That's amazing. That's impressive. We'll have to find out more about how that one went, what you did.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of objections do you get when you talk to someone about a 9-day sale as opposed to a conventional listing?
Well, I'll tell you one of the things that I've learned this over time, and that is I was using the word auction for a while, and I've kind of toned away from the word auction. And I used to use, we used to call them five-star real estate auctions. And when you use the word, when I used the word auction, people got into a fear mode of a distressed, you know, and they think, well, when things go to auction, it's just almost a giveaway price. So that's the main fear, I suppose. And now with this five-day sale, the fear that people have is, one, you're going to sell my property at that price, you know, or lower. We're going to advertise a low, low price to start with. And once they get past that idea that, no, you know, most realtors do, you know, what they call Dutch auctions, where they start the prices high and then they go lower and lower. Whereas on this method, we start the prices low and we let the market take care of itself. But I think that's a big fear, is it's a brand new, or I shouldn't say brand new because it's been around, gosh, a long time. You know, I forget when they wrote the first book. But it's been around a long time, and to do a lot of sales, you know, to get people past that fear. And then it's like, well, what if I don't get the prices that I need? Do I have to sell it?
Uh-huh.
You know, and once you get them assured that there are rules and stuff that they don't have to sell, Then they relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact that the listing isn't at a predetermined price?
I mean, again, that takes some presentation skills to show them exactly where we're going. And one of the things that I found, and not to knock realtors in general.
Yeah, we don't.
But we do this. And that is that, you know, they can be told whatever price they want to hear. And oftentimes this is what happens. And I tell them right up front, if I come in here and I tell you that your house is worth $150 and you think it's worth $160, you can find somebody that'll tell you it's worth $160. Or you can find somebody that'll tell you it's worth $170,000.
Mm-hmm.
But the market really, doing it with the sale program that we do, the market will actually generate what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not me telling you, you know, what your home is worth. And then it's a lot fairer to the seller, because the home's not on the market for, months and months. I think I was looking at our statistics the other day that the average day on market's about 6 months now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have them sign a regular listing form from the board, or do you have something different?
No, it's a regular Colorado State approved form, listing agreement form.
Mm-hmm. Does it have anything about the 9-day sale in it, or the?
It does. There's a special section in there where we use that that I mentioned the 5-day sale process and just spell it all out. There's another section in there that talks about whether they wanted entered into the multiple listing service, which when I do those sales, I don't do that. I generally don't put them in the MLS because we have a rule of putting a price in, a legitimate price and stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've never done it, never needed to. you know, but the seller has to direct me on that listing agreement not to do that.
Okay, so that's the rule now. I want to get into it a little later. I have talked to realtors that are doing the 90-day sale, and they're doing they're putting it on the MLS, and I've had some plenty of FSBO people who have bought my course who have done it, successful ones with the MLS. So, in fact, quite successful. We just had one, not this weekend, but last weekend, who got about 65 people there. It was a FSBO, and his primary marketing was signs and the MLS, and just have to find out a little more about that.
And I've seen others advertise that I think there are some of them that for a flat fee will put it into the MLS, but they're going to need to put a market price on it.
Right.
And in a way that, to me, kind of gives away the whole beauty of the program, you know, where people actually think, and rightfully so, that they're going to get a fair deal on the property.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a realtor sticking a price on it saying this is what the property's worth.
Well, in one of the examples of someone that I've been working with, he has told me that he does is he puts in the full price, the retail price, the fair market value of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a public and a private section of the listing. So the public section will go to places like Realtor.com and other websites that have a subscription fee to the MLS, and the private one will only go to the MLS subscribers like Realtors.
Sure.
And he will put in both of those, but he'll put in a little different language about the fact that the house is going to be done through an inspection and a round robin process. It'll be sold to the highest bidder by Sunday night, and that the price is going to start out at 50% of the price that's there. So he explains that, and he said it's done very well doing
Makes
way.
Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. So that's another marketing, but I'm very interested because you haven't actually used the MLS, and you've done, you know, what, about 100 of these, so that's very interesting because you must have some good ways of marketing besides that. What about issues that you get with listings? Like, what are the kinds of, at this point, do you get these particular issues that you found with the listings when you do it this way?
I can't think really right offhand of any particular issues. I know that the sellers really like it because they don't have to have the properties open for inspection, you know, all the time and to be ready on any given moment for somebody doing a showing on the property. So they're pretty well set. And then it's a matter of coaching people through. Now I have people that will ask me, should they get an appraisal done on them? And I just tell them that I don't think that's a good idea. They ask sometimes if we need to have a private home inspector come through, and that really depends on the property and a lot of other factors. You know, in most cases, I would rather have the buyers do their own inspections through
the
inspection service. And that's the only way that works.
What about what other agents will say about this and how you handle the other side of the transaction as far as agents go and cooperation?
Generally, what you'll do is get some of them in that are very closed. And actually, once they find out that I'm there as a realtor and as a facilitator for the property, that really has eliminated a lot of controversy. The early ones that I did when the owners were doing it and I was just kind of there, there would be a lot of flack from the real estate community about you can't do this or you can't do that, which is not true. So that's eliminated a lot of that. And then if they want to talk about it, I'm more than happy to meet with them and discuss how it all works.
Do you actually are going to be paying them a commission if they bring a buyer to the inspection?
What I've done generally is inform them that we're going to work on a net to the seller, and that according to the rules that we publish to them, that there are no co-op fees paid. So if they want to co-op to that, then they need to know that that's going to be built in on top of that, whatever they bid,
mm-hmm.
or that the buyer themselves are going to pay that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very good. That way you're not shutting off the realtors who might bring in a buyer, and at the same time, if someone is not represented, the seller isn't going to be paying an unnecessary commission.
Right.
Some people listening to this will not agree, but I think that's a very fair way of doing it. Let's talk about planning. Planning on this, some of the issues that come up with planning. One question I have is, have you done these with renters and tenants, investment property where there's a renter that's in the property?
Renters and tenants get just to be a little more tricky.
Yes.
And the ones that we've done, generally, we've waited until the tenants are gone because they can be a real pain in the neck. Because they know that they're going to have to be gone, and the chances are that they're going to be moving anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done generally is to ask the sellers to, give notice to the renters so that they're gone, vacated the property, and then we either have it staged, if there's some furniture around that somebody can put in, or just leave it vacant.
So you try to get them out. What if they can't? Have you had experience where you've had the seller pay $1,000 to the tenant to vacate for the weekend or take a trip somewhere or something like that?
They really haven't paid them anything.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have asked them, and they know the property is going to be sold anyway.
Right.
And once they know that, then I've had sellers offer to pay them some money to help them move. To buy to pay for a rental truck or something like that.
Right.
But not to be gone during the sale. Just we want them out.
Yeah, we do. But I've had people who have done that. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just. But you got to get them out one way or the other. It's mm-hmm. kind of a bummer if you're not.
Yeah.
And very interesting. What about pets? What do you do with the pets for that period?
Oh, unfortunately, they can be a real pain in the neck, too. And, the good thing is that we're talking about 2 days. And I have had clients where they've taken their dogs to the kennels for the weekend, or they've taken them to friends to have them out of the way and stuff. And I've had them where they put them back in the backyard, and we've tried to navigate dogs and stuff around back there, which is not the best situation. It's better if they can move them to somebody else, at least during the inspection period.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. In terms of fix-up, what do you generally end up doing?
Well, fix-up really depends on the sellers. For example, this last one, with these people being in foreclosure, their house could have used a lot of fix-up. Unfortunately, they don't have the money to do those things. I try to tell them that, as far as major things, they're better off letting them go. If there's stuff that, some paint, maybe some carpet, that can increase the value of the property, the better it shows, the better it'll sell, and the better the prices. That's just the name of the game. But to spend $20,000 or $30,000 to get $20,000 or $30,000 back really doesn't make too much sense to me.
So what do you recommend, or what do you have people do? Do you have them throw a quick coat of paint, or you just have them clean up? Or?
Well, very much the cleanup. This last one, like I said, the less is best. I just had them get rid of all of the clutter. There's no way that they could do the fix-up that really this property needed, and it was distressed. So you might as well call a rose a rose. And but in other cases, for them to just put on a quick coat of paint, clean the carpets, make it look as presentable as it can, because it'll bring in a better buyer.
Yeah, I'm a real fan of taking away smells.
Right. Well, absolutely.
I think that's something that's underappreciated, and it's something people don't even notice. I remember a house that I was trying to sell, one of my investment properties. And it just wouldn't sell, and it was the only house that wouldn't sell. And it finally dawned on me when a realtor, thankfully, told me what it was and what to do. And she said, you know, that lawn has a stinky odor, and you should put some lime down on it. And and she was right, and that's really what it was. It was, people could come in, and then they just want to leave. And I don't know why. Maybe I had allergies that, and I didn't notice it. But it's and I give instructions in the 9-day program in the course. I give instructions about you know, some things that people may not know about that are really easy to do to eliminate odors and make things a little more appealing that way. Now, what about documents during this planning process? Do you create, what kinds of documents do you create to hand out during the inspection period or before?
Well, generally, what I have is a brochure box out front. And the brochure box is limited just primarily to rules of the auction or rules of the sale. And so they have those when they come in, and then I have them put together, and I usually put together a picture book or a documentation book that tells about schools and areas and all of that. This is not a book for everybody to have. It's a book that they can look at when they're there or in, you know, go through, and along with property disclosures and that kind of information.
Mm-hmm. So how long is it generally?
It'll maybe have anywhere from 10 to 20 pages to it.
Oh, wow. Is it typically just what you're going to prepare for a conventional sale, or... do you do it differently?
Pretty much so. There isn't really too much different than what I do on a regular listing. For a home, you know, to leave inside the house when people come through for showings and stuff.
Okay. So that's pretty much the same. What about a sort of summary? Do you do a summary to give out to people that may not want 10 or 20 pages?
Nothing that they can actually take with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, they can go through the book and they can just look at it and they can take notes if they want to.
Okay.
But I don't have really anything for them to take.
Okay.
You know, except for the rules of how the sale is done.
Okay, so you have a pre-printed pile of forms of copies of the bidding rules.
That's correct.
Okay. And then what about a bid sheet? What do you do in terms of a bid sheet?
You take the one right out of the book that
mm-hmm.
Bill uses.
Mm-hmm.
And... where they place their bids, and those bids are left on a separate table where they can go in and inspect them anytime they want to.
Do you have one bid sheet that you do, or do you have them all over the house?
No, there's just basically one.
Okay. And again, that's something that different people, I'm starting to recommend, people consider doing bid sheets in the different rooms, and there are people that help them at bid sheets, because it's seems to increase the number of people that give bids, which is nice.
Yep. And I can see that some of this is a control thing.
Yes.
And oftentimes what happens is the sellers will take people through the house, and they're not all that familiar with how the bidding process works. So then they'll bring them back to me, and at that point, then that's where I show them the bid sheets and see if I can get them on the bid sheets.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, what about... do you do photos before you, during this planning process, do you do photos?
Very, very few.
Do you do a few, like just an exterior or?
Right. There may be a front and a back, or maybe a picture of a kitchen or something, but they're very limited.
Okay. And why is that? What's your reasoning behind that?
It's much like the car dealers, and that is that the feel of the wheel makes the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to get in the house and, it's been my experience over the years, and, you know, one time there was virtual office and stuff, and the realtors would show all of these pictures of the house and give every minute detail. And what it did was it got people so that they didn't want the property. They'd find a reason not to go see it.
So your feeling is less is more, to coin a phrase. You really just want to give people a few, just enough photos just to see what it is that they may be
absolutely
looking. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, little bait on the hook, but not the whole worm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that analogy. Do you give? Okay, well, we'll get to that in a moment. Let's see what else. Websites. Do you do anything on websites?
I have my own website and
mm-hmm.
stuff, and but I generally use it as my own real estate stuff, what I do is go on to Craigslist, and I may use it, Craigslist and Live Simon, and there's a few other internet sources.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you do a few things on like, what do you tell, what kind of detail, and what do you say and not say? What's your strategy about what you'll say and not say?
Pretty much everything that's on those is just like the ads or the sign that's in the yard.
Okay.
Which is right pretty much out of the book.
Okay.
You know, that says for sale by owners, property will be offered to the highest bidder on Sunday, that type of stuff.
Okay.
And then where we differentiate from there is that I go to a an 800 number.
Okay.
That has, it's a 24-hour free recorded message.
Okay.
And on that 24-hour free recorded message, I have the seller record a message themselves. And again, they may give a few more details about the house.
Okay.
The location or directions to where it is.
Hmm.
But again, they're not given every minute detail to it.
You don't give the address?
The address and stuff is there.
Okay. Now, what about live calls? Do you set things up to take live calls from people that may want to look at it and want to ask some questions if it's a real person?
The live calls come from the 24-hour hotline.
So you leave the phone number of your office at the end of the message?
Yeah, or the number to the seller themselves.
Okay. Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And then what that seller does is, like I said, they give some general information about the property. But then they'll also read the rules, the bidding rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, they'll say, now, if you have any further questions, you can call me at and leave the numbers.
Okay, so they discuss the house a little bit.
Right.
And then they actually read the rules.
That's correct.
Okay. Very good. That's very interesting.
Yeah, so there's about three times that they get the rules. And that is, you know, if they come by the house and they take one of them out of the box, they've got it there. They listen to it on the 800 number, and then they get another set when they show up at the sale.
Okay. Okay. So you don't have people saying, I bet you still have people saying, I didn't get the rules.
It happens, but very, very little. By this time, they've had three shots at how the game is played.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
And if there's questions, they're welcome to ask them during the inspection period.
Okay. What about special issues? For example, something that you know is non-permitted, something that's maybe being under construction that was interrupted for the sale. What about those situations? Do you disclose those?
Everything's disclosed.
Do you have a special disclosure document, or do you just...
I do. It's a regular Colorado State property disclosure form.
And that's presented. Is that made available to people when they inspect that?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's one of the documents that you create.
Right.
Okay.
And it's there during the inspection, and it's also then available after when we do the contract.
Okay. It's all right. Do you also provide, like you mentioned, we've talked about the fact that you sort of don't like providing an inspection report, but do you provide like a BPO or comps or repair estimates or anything like that, backup materials that at the inspection, do you get those ready so you can show those to people?
I do.
And, okay.
Or generally what I've done is gone around to other properties in the neighborhood, and especially those that have brochure boxes, and collected the brochures and left the brochures out there where they can look at those.
Okay.
And they're all, again, in that little book that they can preview when they come through.
Okay. That's interesting. I like that. Okay.
And see, the difference is that it's not me telling somebody what the house is worth. And I could do the MLS sheets, but it just, for them to have a realtor's flyer right
mm-hmm.
there in front of them
mm-hmm.
Is much more real
yes.
than telling somebody.
Yes. Yes. Now, we're going to talk about marketing now. We're sort of talked about the planning and listing. Now we're sort of moved to marketing. Do you identify the market for a property and then sort of put a quick marketing plan together that's different for each property? For example, is it first-time home buyers? Is it the market for this?
Absolutely. And I kind of sit down with the sellers.
Mm-hmm.
and when we're doing the initial stuff, and have them kind of picture, you know, what their buyer would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, it looks like them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and it's like, well, where would they buy groceries at, or where would they dine at, you know, mm-hmm. or bank at, or these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they Kmart people, or are they Nordstrom's people, or
right.
where do they go?
Right. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you can figure out who the market is for the property.
That's right.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. So you do that in the listing presentation and in the during the listing process?
Right.
Okay. And so now you kind of have an idea of who that market is. Now the kinds of things that you're going to be handling and doing that there's in marketing. You know, I've got some marketing methods here, which we'll touch on: signs, newspaper ads, web ads, MLS. We talked about title mm-hmm. company help, agent marketing, flyers, website directories. Anything that you can think of I left out?
Well, if you go to the flyers part.
Yes.
And not only flyers, but postcards that we have the seller send out to their friends.
Postcards. Okay. So the seller sends them out to their friends.
They send those out. And all of those, the flyers have pull tabs on them.
Okay.
I don't know if we talked about that. They have the 800 number on
mm-hmm.
them. And the 800 numbers, that way we can also track where the calls are coming from.
Okay.
Not to mention having a record of the phone numbers, because it captures the phone numbers when they call the 800 number.
So, yeah, because of the caller ID works for an 800 number for everybody, anybody
That's
who calls great. That.
Right. Which gives us an opportunity then to remind people who are calling back once we have the list, you know, that the sale is on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, so you call everyone back?
I wouldn't say everyone. It really depends on the number of calls that we've gotten. You know,
but
if we're getting lots of calls, and we just kind of let them come on their own.
You want all of them if possible, but if it's over, it can be overwhelming. Not just that you don't.
Right.
And then, what should they say? Those flyers.
Those flyers are made up just exactly like the sign in the front yard.
Okay.
And they're on the canary yellow, what I call ugly yellow plastic. Well, the sign in the front yard is yellow, that ugly yellow corrugated plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the pull tabs and all the other flyers are on a canary yellow paper.
Mm-hmm. And it just says what does it say?
It says for sale by owner. House to be sold Sunday night to the highest bidder, or offered to the highest bidder on Sunday night. And, just, you know, a price. And then the 800 numbers.
Okay. Good. And these are distributed to the places that you collected from the seller.
Right.
Okay.
And then the sellers also have the responsibility of putting those out, too.
Okay, you leave that to the sellers.
Well, I mean, it's a kind of a team thing on that part of it, because we're all going to generally get to different places, but if they know of places restaurants that people like to go to and all that, the more they get out, the better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I leave them with a supply of them, and then they can put them out also.
Okay. And you mentioned postcards. What do the postcards say, and who makes those postcards up?
We run those postcards. We have those the same way through a printer, and virtually they're identical to the sign.
Okay. Do they have a photo on them?
No.
Okay. Do you know if you get results from the postcards as opposed to the flyers? Do you have a way to track that? Have you tested it?
I do, because, again, what they'll do is they'll have that 800 number on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that 800 number, even though all the calls are going into the same recorded message,
okay,
they can be differentiated by the extension number on them. So, for example, it might be the mailbox might be number 10, and so for flyers it would be extension 110. For the newspaper it would be 210. Internet would be 310. And that way, so that then we can tell whether the newspaper's working or whether it's a postcard.
Okay, that's great. That's great. That's really, really, really good. So you found the postcards do work.
Postcards will work. And especially, again, postcards get mailed to people that the sellers know.
And that's sometimes been the source of the sale.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times I think people who know a seller are surprised when they heard, oh, you sold your house. Oh, I didn't know you were selling your house.
Mm-hmm. And they say, well, I wish I'd listened to you to let me know.
I was really interested. I would have been interested in buying your house.
Yeah, or somebody at work said they were wanting to move.
If we had a dime for every time someone said that to us. Craigslist. I've heard, and I know from personal experience, Craigslist, you know, can be difficult because they've worked so hard to fight spammers, and you know, you can get kind of caught up in this. Do you have some special techniques for getting in and staying in, and how often should you repeat, and what are the obstacles that you've encountered?
Well, the thing about Craigslist and those others is that there's a lot of competition on them. And I can put a property on in the morning, and there could be 300 or 400 other properties on there by noon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing, I guess, or one thing that Craigslist does is if you take one out, you know, then they restrict you on how soon you can put it back in.
Right.
So rather than taking them out, we just put another one in and then wait a day or two or something to take it out.
Why would you want to take it out anyway? You mean because it's sold?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you haven't found too many problems with Craigslist working with their new more.
No, not really. I mean, they let me put all kinds of stuff on there.
Sometimes I've heard of realtors telling me that they get flagged by they think it's a competitor, and then it's removed, and then, you know, they have all this trouble with that. Have you ever run into that?
I've had a couple of them removed, and usually it's something that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, that I took one out for some reason or another and didn't wait long enough, and that's how I learned it. You just put one in first and then take the old one out. Or,
I see.
You know, or if there's a change made, you know, I've had some where we put them in and then we've changed the date of the sale.
Sure.
And so that goes in after.
Okay.
Or before we take the old one out.
Okay, so you'll have two ads in for, how long do you have to keep them both in? Because one's not accurate.
I usually wait, I think it's 2 days.
Okay.
But usually, like I said, there's so many ads in there. And, you know, to be specific so that people that are looking in a specific area, something
right.
that'll key that.
Right.
Because there can be hundreds of homes in there that just...
Do you put it in the topic subject line, or what do you do as far as the area?
It's in the topic subject line.
Okay. All right. Good. And do you, how soon before the inspection period do you place the ad?
It depends on how much time they give me. I mean, I could, I really don't have any problem with putting them in as early as, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time.
Okay.
If they let me do it.
Okay, because that helps the get more traffic.
Right. But again, they'll get lost. It doesn't take long for them to get lost in that mass of
right.
stuff. So.
Right. So then you have to put an ad in again and keep running
right.
it. Yeah.
That's correct.
What about local real estate for sale sites or FSBO sites? Do you place the ads in those, these directories that list the local houses for FSBOs?
I haven't.
Okay. What about any other websites that you use for listing the inspection?
No.
Okay.
I mean, there's just tons of them. And
I know.
I think a person could get lost in
it. Yes.
You know, and it's just a good thing a guy's got to test them.
Yeah, then they change. Things
right.
don't work. How about agent, marketing the agents? Do you do a email or flyer drop to the agents within a certain radius of the property?
No.
Okay.
Never done anything like that.
Okay. And then a lot of people have, and they've said it's been successful.
Sure.
So it's just.
So most of the time they'll come by and they'll see that sign because the yard signs are real, you know, are real traffic stoppers.
We're going to get to those too. What about title company reps? Some people will have email blasts to investors and realtors that the title officer knows or that.
I've mentioned that to some of the title company because they know that we're coming through them, coming back, and they've been really cooperative.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're always trying to earn your business, and so
right.
So that's a good one. Okay, what about so that could be good. We talked about the MLS a little bit. We talked about that newspaper ads. Do you do newspaper ads?
We've done newspaper ads, and a lot of those here, the Denver Post and Rocky Mountain News, have gotten extremely expensive.
Yes.
And, so it's been really limited just to, and they're different ads because of the expense. They're not the full kind of ad that they talk about in the book. But the local papers are a lot more accommodating, which means that we can do bigger ads, nicer ads that look more like the signs, and they seem to draw.
So you found that the big newspapers are no longer cost effective for your area.
Right.
That's something that really varies by area by area.
Sure it does.
Don't know why. And there's also the situation of a house that may be in a community that has its own paper, but there's a large metropolitan area that community is sort of an exurb of. And in that case, do you ever consider drawing that big audience out of the big paper?
We have, and with something like a Westword.
Mm-hmm.
A Westword is a whole citywide paper, or we've done stuff in the Denver Business Journal, and that's a bigger paper, and those generally are less expensive than the major ones.
Okay. The Business Journal.
Right.
Because, I mean, it may be more expensive on a cost per thousand basis, but their audience is smaller, but it's focused.
That's correct.
Okay, and that's worked well for you?
Yes, it has.
Oh, that's interesting. They have a real estate section, or where do you advertise in?
Yeah, they do have a real estate section, in most cases. But if the rates are right, just a regular little display ad on their own that looks like the signs is really a lot more effective.
Oh, that's interesting. And so all of this takes... No website. You mentioned no website.
Well, I have my own website, and I put properties on it.
But you don't list that in the ads, or do you?
Not generally.
Okay.
No, I don't want them necessarily to focus on me and my website. I'd just rather they focus on the sale and getting the property sold.
Have you ever thought about having a website instead of the toll-free number?
I was at a seminar the other day with the ePro people from the National Association of Realtors, and they talked about having individual websites, which I don't think would be a bad thing if there's a way to track it, to see what kind of hits, and then, again, I would try to tie it into the 800 number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure it's good or bad. I know some people I work with do a lot of stock in websites, and others don't.
Sure. There, again, going back to if there's information, that's one thing, but oftentimes, and this is just what's happened to me, is that oftentimes too many pictures are more of a turnoff than they are on getting people into the house.
Because they're used as an excuse not to go look?
Absolutely.
That's a common mistake, too many photos.
Yep.
What about too much information in general?
Way too much information.
Okay.
And one of the things, what we want with the sales is to have lots of people there.
You want them to visit the house during the inspection period.
Absolutely.
That's what you really want.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly what you want. So, we haven't. Let's talk about signs. What do the signs say, or did you already tell me that?
No, the signs are just pretty much like they're in Bill's book.
Right.
And but I suggest that they're handwritten, and I know that there are places that'll do professionally made signs. But it's just been my experience that those handwritten signs will draw more attention. You know, than a professional sign. Same way with a realtor sign.
Do you use this corrugated, that ugly yellow, as you said, to,
yes.
And you use signs all over the neighborhood to lead people to the place?
I do.
Okay, how many signs do you generally use?
Oh, again, depending on the property and how difficult it is to find.
Mm-hmm.
But there can be 6 to 8 of them, probably.
And I've heard it depends. So sometimes you want to track this. It's like a funnel. So you may want to have some signs out in the big highway, and then those will lead people to the smaller streets and the feeder mm-hmm. streets in the neighborhood, and then some signs in each corner and all that type of thing.
Sure.
And, I mean, I can imagine it could be as many as 20 or 30 if you really wanted to get serious on the signs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've heard that I've seen that be very successful for people.
Mm-hmm.
When do the signs go up?
Generally, they start about 3 or 4 days before.
What about people, the sign police, taking them down and your sign enemies? You know, what are you?
Oh, some of those have happened. And some of the cities, depending on, because there's suburb cities here that have rules. And if they don't have the sign permit stickers on them, they'll take them down.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that with the corrugated plastic, it's cheap. So we just go put them back up again.
Right. So you basically just take that into account. You should check to make sure your signs are still up.
Right.
Do you use balloons and attachments to the signs, like on the inspection period weekend?
The balloons and stuff, and I have some banner streamers that I use, and they go on the house themselves.
Okay.
But there isn't anything on the other signs. And again, some of the cities have ordinances that do not allow balloons. And, you know, and that's one of the beauties of a handwritten sign, is that the law enforcement people generally will leave those things alone. If it's a professional-looking sign, they'll stop or they'll pick them up.
Interesting. Very interesting. What about human signs? Do you ever use those? And by that, I mean for people that are listening for you. You know, you probably know the hiring a guy with a big old pointer to wave it around mm-hmm. at a major highway.
Sure. I have not done that as of yet.
Human directionals are called.
Right. Uh-huh. No, I haven't done that yet. Just haven't had the manpower to do that.
Doesn't sound like you've had to.
No.
Some places you will, and I think it also for a higher priced house. I've got people listening who are going to want to do million-dollar houses, and there's just a thinner market, and there's more marketing required for that, and you may want to do those human directionals and spend a bit more money.
Absolutely. And again, I would test it, you know? And just, you know, people coming in and say, well, did you see the sign on?
Yeah.
You know?
Test it so you ask them where they've heard of you and for the next time.
Right.
Well, so we're now at the point where we've marketed, and how do we know whether we're going to do this thing and whether it's going to work? I mean, how do you measure that?
I think Bill recommends it, whatever in the book, that it's 25 to 30 calls within a 5-day or 3-day period. Wednesday before, I've had them where we've had as few as 10 calls, and still gone ahead with the sale in. You know, as I said with this one I just did, we have no other choice.
Right.
And what I'm looking for really is a couple, 2 or 3 really good buyers. And if I think I have that, then we're good to go.
Okay. Have you talked to them?
I necessarily haven't talked to them, but they'll call through the funneling of the 800 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the seller will tell me, yeah, I got so-and-so in there really interested in the property, or you know, mm-hmm. or somebody called and they said that they want to see it beforehand, and it's like, no, it doesn't work that way. And so they're coached pretty much on that, but they can get a sense of whether somebody's legitimate or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. So the seller can have a pretty keen
mm-hmm.
ability on this in this area to tell you. And this is something that I've heard as well. I would be hesitant to cancel one of these, although it has happened. When have you had to reschedule one?
Oh, we've had them. What I work on is out here, what I call a 90-40 rule. And the 90-40 rule is that if it's going to be over 90 degrees or under 40 degrees, you're probably not going to have a very good sale.
And that's because of where you are and that's right. How people respond to the weather. And in Los Angeles, it could be if it rains a quarter inch, then it's not going to be a good sale.
Absolutely. And, you know, those things you really won't know until...
I mean, somewhere in North Dakota, they don't care if it's under 40, it's or Minnesota,
right.
It's a warm day, and they're fine, you know.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Also, I've heard of people that are, I know I've talked to my subscribers who have done these very successfully with only a few people who have shown up just because there was really bad weather, and it turns out they still were successful.
Oh, absolutely. It can be because all you're looking for is one, and if they're motivated, you know, I don't know, I've had one where there was an illness in the family we had to postpone, and that's pretty much up to the seller's call on that. And if that happens again, if they're funneling through the 800 number, then we have phone numbers and stuff generally that we can call people back or let them know somehow that it's been changed. So most of them have gone just as scheduled.
Right. Do you have people that, for religious reasons, don't want to do a Sunday, and they say, can we do Friday and Saturday, and does that work?
I've had them, but they have not worked
okay.
for me.
They didn't work for you. The Friday is no good.
No. Or we've tried to do, a Monday, something, a Saturday, Monday or something, and that doesn't work.
Okay. And that's something I've heard mixed things about.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it depends on an area.
Right.
You know, and the makeup of the people that are there. But.
Right. 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 So what do you do in terms of greeting people when they, first of all, how many people do you have, before the inspection, do you work with, you have a team of people that you sort of do a debriefing on?
Well, generally myself, I usually have an assistant there, and then there will be the owners, and hopefully there's two or more of them. And
okay.
Some of them have recruited neighbors to come into this.
How many people do you like to have?
Run them through the whole process of how it works and what their responsibilities really are. And then we go through a debriefing or a briefing of making sure that if there's valuable things in the property, you know, jewelry and stuff, that they're gone, any drug stuff, any of that stuff, you know.
Medications,
uh-huh. Yeah, nothing, you know, if they're illicit drugs, we're not there in the first place. But.
Sure. What do you tell them when you say run them through the process? What do you tell them to do?
Well, that this is how it's going to work, and that is that starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, people are going to start showing up.
Mm-hmm.
As we bring them through the door, we want somebody there to greet them and ask them if they'll sign a guest register for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can either walk them through, or they can tell them that they're welcome to go through on their own, whichever they feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And to point out, you know, where the little property book is, and they oftentimes, if one of the sellers is doing the greeting, then they'll introduce me and let them know that I'm going to do the facilitating the sale, and that I'm licensed to do that. Unless I'm out of state, then we have an attorney do it.
Mm-hmm. So you have the settlement guy there.
Right.
Okay. Do they walk around with a guy? Do they explain the bidding process, just hand them the rules? I mean, I guess it's pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, usually what happens is they come through the door, they hand them a set of the rule sheets, and then ask them to register.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty well turn them loose, and like I said, they tell them who I am, and that when they get through, they're welcome to come back, and then we'll talk about how the bidding is and to place a bid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And so do they, do you say just, you know, place a bid even if it's only a dollar or a penny, or do you do that, or do you just only allow serious kinds of bids? Because I've heard, again, some of the ones that I've been involved with helping people on or that my subscribers have done, they've been very successful even getting people to bid anything.
That's the name of the game, and, you know, I read that too. People talk about not taking low bids, but the name of the game really is to get people on the bid sheet. And the more people that place bids, regardless of what they are, the better the sale is going to go.
because you'll have more people to call and you'll have more names on that sheet, which is a psychological tool.
Absolutely. And then really what happens is that bidders will look at that sheet and they'll say, oh, I see somebody bid a penny or somebody bid a dollar, and they'll chuckle and say, well, yeah, you know, will you actually sell it for a penny or a dollar? And it's like, well, what do you think? Probably not, because wouldn't you give me $2 for it today?
It's probably not, because you'd probably want to give me $2 for it and not let someone get it for a dollar. And someone else would want to give me $3 for it,
that's
so I doubt whether we're going to be in that situation. That's a funny that's a funny way of doing it.
Well, we have fun doing it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, or you tell them, well, there was a lady in, and she needed to discuss it with her husband, and she's afraid to put in an offer, and so she just put a penny. It's funny to watch these human dynamics of people.
Right. And so what are the things that you run into this weekend? I mean, that we haven't, you know, what are some of the things that doesn't sound like it's very complicated.
It's not a complicated process. occasionally, and I've had some where when we go to the final stage of the contract stage where the buyer, the top bidder, has decided they do not want it for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of the sale is that then you have the second and third bidders to go back to.
Right.
And I've done that several times.
Let's kind of cover that. Are we done then with this is the inspection period? This is about it?
We are.
Okay. So now we're on to the round robin. So how do you start the round robin? We're talking about usually you've already, you know, it's been an exhausting day on Sunday and a Saturday and an exciting day. And now you probably give yourself a few hours and then you start making phone calls.
I do.
Okay.
We all go out to dinner somewhere, or we just take a break from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally show up back either at 7 or 8 o'clock
mm-hmm.
to start the calls. And then I list the calls from highest to lowest.
And you say what?
My first call is that, hi, my name is Tom Hoffman. I'm calling with the sale on the property at such and such. And your current offer is this. And if that's the high bid, then I tell them that you were the high bidder at this time, and I'm starting the calls now. Do you want to stay there at that level, or would you prefer to raise your bid?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the next call is that I'm at such and such a bid, and we work in $500 increments.
Do you want to raise that?
That's correct.
And now, one thing that I've heard from the people who've been going through this, we say it kind of gets tedious at some point, because sometimes do you ever go up to $1,000 increments at some point, or kind of?
I've had, more often than not, the buyers themselves will do that. I don't have to. You know, they'll know how the game is, but when I call them, they'll say, well, I'll up at $2,000 or $3,000.
Okay. Okay. And how do you end up with a winning bid?
Well, the last one is there, that's the highest bid, and that's the one that we go to.
What are the situations that could come up with this round robin that you've seen at this point?
You have people that forget that they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You have people that, well, I don't know, I need some time to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've had people call back. Because I tell them, well, once you drop off, you're done. And then I've had them call back and say, hey, I want back in the bid again.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes for an exciting thing, especially depending on where we are in the bidding process.
But you'll let them back in.
Usually we let them back in.
Yes, because, you know, it's in the best interest of the buyer, of the seller.
That's correct.
Sometimes.
We usually let them back in, or I would get through and say, okay, I've got to go back to this one and see where he is, you know. We try to be as fair, and, people play by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, you brought up a good point, and that is that that we're there to get the seller, you know, maximum amount for their property.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what it takes, and somebody says, you know, that I just got here, I forgot about the auction, and, you know, can I get back in? Then we proceed from there.
Now, you don't tell somebody who has the high bid, right?
No.
That's a really a not a good thing to do.
No, it isn't. And I did one in a real small town.
They could tell.
Yeah, they could tell. But it was all right. And they were friends, so it worked okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
It was interesting because the seller, she knew all of these people too, and originally she'd say, you know, well, I hope so-and-so doesn't get it, and then
yeah.
The more you get to the end, it's like, well, I don't care. Let's just, you know, the anxiety level or the stress gets so high that it's like, well, let's just get this done. So.
Yeah. So what about the high bidder now? What do you do as far as, say, let's meet tomorrow to settle?
I do. What I do is set up a time with them on Monday, and I can do a regular contract.
And if somebody is, so what if they don't want to meet on Monday? Then there's something wrong, I would assume.
Oh, I have to go through that process to see if they're not interested enough to meet on the next day, it's really not that important to them.
Right. And then what happens? Usually you write up the contract all right then, or just, you know, what are the typical things you run into?
I do. I go through the whole, whatever 12 pages of our contract are.
The 12 pages of the Colorado Association
right.
of Realtors side contract.
Yeah, the state contract.
And then do you get a deposit and everything, or? Try to get a deposit.
Yep. A lot of that, another advantage to the sale itself is generally the cream comes to the top. And
really?
We have better bidders, better buyers, and they're usually putting money down or putting a substantial money down on it.
They already figured that out. I mean, you know, it's just easier. Do you ever concern yourself back for a moment to the inspection? Do you concern yourself about, or in the round robin, do you concern yourself with how someone's qualified or their financing, or do you assume?
Not at all.
Okay, you just assume.
I just let them all come.
Okay. So you just assume somebody's got it lined up at this point anyway.
Well, and because the interesting part is that they'll know once the bids start.
Yes.
You know, whether they're going to be able to do it or not.
So they're not going to just, you know, screw everything up by bidding something that they can't honor.
No, I've not had that happen yet.
Yeah, I mean, everything will happen eventually, but. So most, what's the percentage of time that you get the contract written up okay?
No, it's probably, I'm at almost 100% if the sale goes through.
What about
I've only had one that, one I did in Arizona where the top bidder said no, and then I had to go down to number three. Number two said no, and number three was just ecstatic that they got another shot at it.
Right. Were they curious, though, and did they think this is damaged goods now? Like, why
did
they?
They're going to ask, and there were questions.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right, but that's rare. That's interesting how rare that is.
It is very rare.
Huh. Yeah. And then the settlement, everything with the settlement is pretty much the same as a regular sale.
Right.
Are you in escrow state or do you use settlement lawyers?
No, we're in escrow state.
Okay, so most people probably don't use a real estate lawyer even in the whole transaction.
No. Uh-uh.
Okay.
The title companies will do the whole,
right.
whole thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. So that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What did I miss?
Well, I mean, sometimes it can take 30 days for that process.
Oh, yeah.
You know, afterwards, and then to make sure that they get all the inspections and appraisals. And
the usual stuff for any
right.
any real estate deal.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, now, what about, have you done a lot of short sales this way?
I have not.
Okay. Now, the short sales that I've, you know, a lot of our people are doing short sales. It doesn't seem to be any problem. In fact, you've got a list of people that have bid, and you can show the lenders that you've exposed the house to the market, and you've had a number of people come through and bid, and it's a very, helpful in getting the lenders convinced that the offer is a good offer. That's usually the valuation is usually the sticking point on a short sale. So
now I did have a call the other day when I sent out the newsletters from one of my old clients, and he was doing a program where he was buying the properties on a short sale basis,
mm-hmm.
and then turning them,
mm-hmm.
and needing a way, and he's just getting started doing this, but needing a way to turn those quick,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the banks are only going to give him so much time
mm-hmm.
to fulfill that contract.